Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. With productivity at a 20-year high, surging factory output, and sizzling third-quarter economic growth, the U.S. economy is on the rebound. But the recovery won't be spread evenly across the country, and state governments know it. They're competing for the cream of the crop, for the talented young workers who will drive a new wave of business and industry. They are young, highly educated, tech-savvy, and they're looking for a cool place to call home. Tonight on Point, the Great American Cool Competition, cities and states striving to be hip to attract a cutting-edge workforce and economic growth. We begin tonight in Lansing, Michigan, where 44-year-old Democratic Governor Jennifer Granholm has labeled the quest for cool an economic imperative. The governor has made Michigan the first state to officially create a Cool Cities campaign, asking the mayors of more than 200 cities to find ways to make Michigan more attractive to the cream of the young workforce. I asked Governor Granholm why being cool is important for Michigan or any state.
Well, first of all, being cool, and you know, this is just it's a nice concept, but the reality is it's got its base in our economy. We need to make sure that Michigan has the cities to attract that workforce between the ages of 25 and 34 if we're going to grow our economy. We don't want to lose those folks. Why aren't people coming to Detroit as opposed to Chicago or Boston or San Francisco? That's what we want to create, is that sort of dynamism, that kind of magnetism to make us a magnet state. And just because we're cold in Michigan, cold is cool too.
So it's more than cold you're trying to project here, though. What is it exactly? You've sat down and thought about this.
Well, in fact, a lot of this came from Richard Florida, who wrote a book called The Creative Class, which did a survey basically of all of these states to determine who was cool and who wasn't, or who was attracting that creative class. And when he talks about that, he's talking about the technology worker, the immigrant, the gay community. There's a whole array of people who create cool in our urban centers, and that group, that cluster, is what we want to attract. So he looked at the three T's, he called them, technology, talent, and tolerance. And on that Richter scale, we want to move our numbers up so that we can attract young people. Obviously, we want to keep the older set, too. I certainly don't fall in that age bracket, but I certainly want my kids to stay here, to think this is a cool place to be, not just retaining, but attracting people.
So it's more than just cool music in the air or a cool cultural scene, artistic arts scene. It's tolerance, it's technology. That's an important piece of it.
Well, clearly a wired community is very cool. You want people to live in lofts and socialize in cyber cafes, and you want to have walkable communities where people can walk to work or bike to work. When I think of what a cool community is, I think of places like San Francisco or places where they've widened the sidewalks so that you could have outdoor cafes, where music is piped in, where there's a whole array of peoples. It's a great people-watching area. You've got a blend of architecture. You've got music bookstores, cafes, Starbucks, yes. You've got Borders, yes. But you also have a blend of peoples. And all of that is very interesting and intriguing. But for us, in order to determine what is cool, we got to go right to the source. And so we have, in fact, created cool commissions, prime ministers of cool around our state in order to get people thinking in all of our cities about what it would be to create cool in Michigan. We've created a movement here. It's been pretty exciting. We sent letters to mayors in 274 cities across our state asking them to create their own cool city advisory groups. We've got a sort of executive advisory group that is advising me, and then I'm going to take it to all of the universities too and have, I don't know if you can, if a town hall meeting is cool. I got to think of a new word for it. But we got to have interaction with young people and ask them, what would it take for you to stay? What would it take for you to create cool in this community?
Some of the coolest spots in America we can think of, Soho kind of defines New York cool anyway, were not necessarily created by any government intervention. Can government intervention dictate, support, whatever you want to call it, can it create cool?
Government intervention is definitely uncool, don't you think?
Well, I think so.
Yes, bureaucracy is uncool. But at least we can get the conversation going and get people to think about what they would create in their communities. This isn't about government telling these local communities what to do. It's about them tapping into the creative juices of their local communities and their young people to say, what is it that we should be doing to sort of empower them to become, as Gandhi would say, the change that they would like to see in the world.
So what kinds of ideas are coming up to from your cool commissions?
Very clearly, people think that it is important to be tolerant, and they do think technology is very important, but it really depends on the area. Like in Detroit, for example, Detroit has a great and very rich music history. So music and the opportunity for music is very important to those who are advising us from Detroit. Clearly, diversity is important. Clearly, the ability to accept and invite people of different lifestyles with different dress, different sexual orientation, different professions. The artist community, creating artist colonies is very important, but also attracting those kind of hot jobs that create cool cities, like technology-based jobs that young people would be excited about taking on. It's important to cluster. It's important to make sure you provide incentives for housing, a mixture of housing, and it's great to have aesthetics as well. Aesthetics are very important to making sure that people feel like they're in a cool place. But, you know, 24/7 places, dynamic places, energized downtowns, they offer a sense of place and historic preservation, meeting the new world.
And the difference between this and traditional economic development, when you have to communicate it to those 274 mayors, how do you put it in a nutshell?
Well, I tell those mayors, first of all, that just being a mayor is by definition being uncool, and you cannot have your cool advisory panels consisting solely of politicians, because that will just knock you right out of the box. But the people you must have and listen to are those that are hip, that are in the groove. You know who those people are in your communities, who are the creative ones. And then if you combine those policymakers who will honestly listen to the young set, the dynamic set, they are the ones that can decide how they want to provide those incentives.
Mm-hmm. And if and when this all comes together, then draw the line from establishing this kind of cool culture, cool communities, to that economic vibrancy you want. How does it flow through from one to the other?
Well, if we don't retain this workforce of 25 to 34-year-olds, then we have lost that generation of workers. And as Carly Fiorini, who's president of Hewlett-Packard, says, you can keep all the tax incentives you want, but if you don't give me a skilled workforce, I'm not going to locate.
And you've been losing them, right?
And not just that, but that we attract. We want to be the magnet. You know, we've got wonderful communities like Ann Arbor, which has the University of Michigan. We have a huge university population across the state. We have 15 state universities and 29 community colleges, a whole slew of private colleges. But we want to make sure that particularly around universities where we know that there's that young population, we can create that sort of dynamism, and we don't want to lose them. We don't want to have a brain drain.
And you're not saying what industry it's going to be. You're simply saying if they stick around, we're confident they'll create economic activity.
What we want to do really is to foster a sense of entrepreneurship. We want to get that innovation that the younger set has. You know, often in industrial states, like in Michigan, the workforce here has been reliant upon a big employer. In Michigan, for example, incredible Ford Motor Company, of course, was founded. And people would say, I work at Ford's. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the parent company. Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And they're used to being taken care of. Well, in the 21st century, we've got to create an entrepreneurial environment where people recognize that they are their own business. They are themselves the opportunity for economic development. So we want to create an environment for entrepreneurship, for technology, technologies related to engineering and homeland security. Those kinds of industries are all natural home here. And so we have to shift people's paradigm about what it is to live in a state like Michigan.
Did you ever think, Governor Granholm, that you grew up to be governor and one of your primary planks would be coolness?
No, who would have thought? And really, as my kids would say, I am really not cool at all. But, you know, as somebody who knows it when she sees it, but is nowhere near being it, I've got to consult with those who know best. And perhaps my kids are the first people to consult with.
That's great. Good luck to you there.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for joining us.
You bet.
Governor Jennifer Granholm spoke with me from Lansing, Michigan, where her statewide Cool Cities campaign is a national first. We're talking tonight about the quest for cool, about cities and states striving to be hip to attract top young workers and robust economic growth. Do you buy the equation that a vibrant cultural scene plus tolerance equals a rich seedbed for economic growth? What makes a city a magnet for you? Is your city cool enough to be a national draw for cutting-edge young talent? Is that what it now takes to succeed? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is Richard Florida, professor of regional economic development at Carnegie Mellon University and author of The Rise of the Creative Class and How It's Transforming Work, Leisure, Community, and Everyday Life. Good evening and welcome, Richard Florida.
Hey, how are you doing?
Great. Great to have you. With me in the studio tonight is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, you fine hipster, you, Jack.
Hey, I'm the guy behind the sunglasses.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Richard Florida, the governor of Michigan, clearly read your book and is pretty excited about it. Are we still in an era where cool can do it? We know cool was very cool in the 90s, but in a period that's been more job shy, is cool still what makes it happen, or is it big ethanol factories?
Well, first of all, I want to say hi to Jack Beatty. Jack probably doesn't know it, but I quote him in my book and have been very influenced by his writings and the stuff he's done in The Atlantic and The Atlantic Online. So
Jack Beatty is the heart of hip. There is no question about it, and we all know that.
What a nice night to have the governor of Michigan say nice things about my work and to be on the phone with you guys. But, you know, the book basically says that creativity is the source of economic growth and that we've seen this remarkable increase in people, how we estimate it may be crude, but remarkable increase in people who do creative things for a living. And that's not just artists and poets and musicians and guys with ripped T-shirts and tattoos and piercings. That's people who do science and technology and do infotech and biotech and do design and architecture and industrial design and also work in the traditional knowledge-based professions. You know, that group was less than 5% of the population 100 years ago. It was still about 10% of the workforce 50 years ago. Today, it's a third of the workforce. And more than that, this group of people that work in the creative sector of the economy, I call them the creative class for short, if you divide the economy into three great sectors, the manufacturing sector, the service sector, and the creative sector, you add up all the wages and salaries, these folks account for 50% of all wages and salaries paid in the United States. So clearly they're an important economic force, and I think what the governor's trying to get at, I'm going to meet her next week, and I've never met her, I'm really excited about that, is that you have to make cities that are economically vibrant as a first-order condition. Absolutely. You've got to have a thick labor market with lots of opportunity. But they've got to offer more than that, and that involves giving people something that they're attracted to.
Well, what comes first in this chicken or egg thing? How do you – can you create cool without having that economic base?
You know, I don't mean to plug my paperback edition for my book. But
You do. That's so cool.
I just wrote the preface for it, and it comes out in a couple of weeks. And I tackle this because a lot of critics have said, you know, Florida, you got this chicken and egg thing backwards. I think the point is that it's a false dichotomy. That obviously you need to have a vibrant economy with what I like to call a thick labor market, because the truth of the matter is job tenure is unfortunately, and it's something to be troubled about, very short. It's less than 3 years on average for an adult worker and less than a year on average for one of these young people that the governor, I think, so appropriately wants to attract and retain in her state.
But you're saying you've got to have both. But Richard, Florida, through your work and through the governor who's picked it up, you've got these poor mayors in Flint, Michigan and Kalamazoo going out, you know, naming commissioners of cool, trying desperately to be cool to make that economy. Do they have a prayer if they don't have an economic base to begin with?
No, but they are building. Remember, for the past 20 years, state economic development strategy has basically, and this is what I worked on. I mean, I don't have a degree in arts and culture. I don't have a degree in multicultural diversity. I never took courses in that stuff. My topic is economic growth, and I try to understand how countries and regions grow. And basically what's happened is economists have admitted some variables. So what states have done for the past 20 years is focus on technology. They've tried to bolster their technology bases, and they've tried to attract companies. Now, let's take a case that the governor mentioned, Ann Arbor, Michigan. By all accounts, Ann Arbor, given the research volume that flows through there, should be the technology mecca, one of the three or four top technology meccas of the country. It's not. Why? Because people don't stay there and in the greater Detroit area. People are obviously looking for great jobs, but the point is, and I think cool is a rubric for this, what people really want is a place that they feel comfortable, they feel validated, and the other thing going on here is this huge demographic shift. You know, I mean, I grew up in a Leave It to Beaver family. I had a working dad, a stay-at-home mom, two boys in the house. Less than 8% of us are in that family today. Only 23.5% of us live in a nuclear family. There are more single people out there. So what's happening is that communities compete for jobs and people. They can no longer compete by saying, you know, we're going to give you great schools and affordable housing and a safe street.
The nuclear family, the Leave It to Beaver family, isn't enough of a base. Richard Florida, stand by. Jack Beatty, Mr. Cool, we're going to be to you in just a moment. We're talking tonight about the Great American Cool Contest. You can join the conversation. What makes a city a magnet for you is being cool, now a prerequisite for being economically vibrant in America. We're at 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the Great American Cool Contest, about cities and states striving to be hip to attract top young workers and economic growth. My guest tonight is Richard Florida. He joins us from Washington. He's author of The Rise of the Creative Class. And with me in the studio tonight, Jack Beatty, cited only in this hour as a great inspiration to all that's cool. Jack, what do you think of this? Where's the mix here? Should we all grow goatees and I don't know, you know, bongo drums are the latest thing? Are we on our way to glory?
Well, first of all, I want to thank Richard Florida for his kind words. My mic wasn't working. I actually know about a test case in cool, and that is the cities of the Hudson River Valley. In the 19th century, that was the great highway of America with the opening of the Erie Canal. And it had, and in the 1840s, Troy, I think, was the richest city in the country. But its modern history really is a kind of recession from the days when, I mean, Jack Welch basically closed down GE plants up and down that corridor, and IBM did the same thing. And the region has never really recovered. So each city is trying to do something different. Troy, for example, is actually pursuing a kind of arts first. You know, instead of saying, what's your economy, they're saying, no, we're just going to go to artists and see how that works. And they're giving, or they were a couple of years ago, they actually subsidize artists in buying, in renting and buying studios in the former, some of the factories there. It was the shirt collar capital of the United States, so plenty of factories. It is the local college, Russell Sage College, was giving $5,000 contributions to people's down payments if they would move into the adjacent area. They built an enormous art center that covers an entire city block where they have film, sculpture, live performance, the works. And the housing stock is promising for them. It's great Victorian brick architecture. You can buy a 6,000 square foot house for $250,000.
So move back in and be cool. Feel cool.
Feel cool. And they have one restaurant there opened by a Culinary Institute of America chef. And I tell you what, you could imagine just that one restaurant being a draw for people to come. It's so good.
But, Jack, as I sat there tonight listening to the governor of Michigan saying, what we need in this state for economic growth is more musicians and bohemians and gays. Can you imagine Henry Ford or Andrew Carnegie or Rockefeller? I mean, wouldn't they be spinning?
They certainly would. They certainly would. That whole notion would have seemed so alien to them. But this is what economic development requires now. I mean, you've got to be ingenious in these areas. Now, the city of Hudson tried a different strategy. They went cool by actually encouraging antique dealers to come. The main city is one long line of antique dealers. But the locals have rebelled against this and have signed up with what's going to to be the largest cement plant in the country.
So antiques are just too precious,
It's going to be built right on the Hudson. It's going to spew dioxin down across the downtown. You'll be able to hear the conveyor belts downtown. And people who've invested all their money, gays, restaurateurs, antique people, artists in downtown real estate are about to see it torn up because of this, you know, because of 100 jobs making cement.
Eat this cement dust. Jack, Richard Florida, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from New York, David Dukovich. He's a staff writer for Forbes.com. He's author of the annual Index of 40 Best American Cities for Singles. Good evening and welcome, David Dukovich.
Good evening. Thanks so much for having me on.
It's great to have you. Now, first, help us out here. We're trying to navigate the shoals of coolness and hipness tonight, but you've got an index aimed at best cities for singles. Is that synonymous with hippest cities, coolest cities?
Well, I think that the two are related. In addition to actually using Richard Florida's coolness index, we look at things like the number of bars and restaurants for a nightlife component. We look at culture, you know, the number of museums, theaters, university population in an area. We've got the economic components of job growth and cost of living single, you know, the cost of a six-pack of Heineken and the cost of a pizza. And a singles ratio ranking, you know, the ratio of other singles in the area.
So does your top 40 list tend to come up with economically robust cities across the American landscape?
It's actually interesting. Not typically, well, you need a combination of both, you know, the culture, the nightlife, and the economics in order to do well on our list. The city that won last year excels at both of those two components, and that's Austin, Texas. It's got the second highest job growth ranking. And it also does well in nightlife, and it does well in the coolness factor. So
this sounds like a list that American cities would like to be on. They've got thriving economies. They've got thriving cultures. You've got Austin number one, Denver number two, Boston three, and then right on down the list, Atlanta five, Raleigh-Durham nine, Chicago 11, Minneapolis 16, Nashville 24, Milwaukee 25. And then you get down to Detroit 32, Providence, Rhode Island 35, but they're still making the list. Is it good to be anywhere on this top 40 list?
No.
Oops.
What we do is we look at the 40 biggest cities by population.
Oh, I see.
And we rank them. So Austin does spectacularly well. It comes in first. But Pittsburgh, conversely, where actually Professor Florida's from, does spectacularly bad. At number 40, it comes dead last, and it's been last for the past two consecutive years.
Richard Florida, are you that uncool that your hometown is at the bottom of the pile?
I'm really uncool, you know? But I think, you know, what's been interesting is actually looking at a place like Pittsburgh struggle. And you know, I could think of no more intrinsically advantaged place than Pittsburgh. It has great universities, Carnegie Mellon, where I teach. It has the legacy of people not only like Andrew Carnegie and George Westinghouse, but Andy Warhol and a whole, you know, August Wilson, Billy Strayhorn, whole host of cultural innovators. But it's the kind of, you know, I think what the governor's word for cool, if I had to substitute a word, people want to live in a place they can be themselves and not have to conform to kind of this organization man, company man norm. And when she uses cool, what I think of is a place that allows you to be who you want to be and realize your dream. And when I was listening to Jack, you know, he reminded me of what my idol and mentor, Jane Jacobs, said when she was talking about Rochester and Pittsburgh. Mm. She said, those places are great places, but they're controlled by a group of people she called the squelchers. Ooh. And the squelchers come in there and try to tell you what to do, how to behave, how to conform, what you have to do. And she says creative people, and that's everyone. I don't think it's just gay people and artists and musicians. It's everybody has creativity. They just want to be themselves and make a difference. They want to make their neighborhood great. They want to do interesting things, whatever that may be, making pots and pans or making bicycles or making art or culture. But what happens in those communities is they're not allowed. Their dreams are squelched. And I think what the governor is doing that's interesting is not the cool rubric, but she's actually saying to mayors, get out of the way. Let people define what they want to be and how they want their communities to be run. And I think that's very important.
So what's Pittsburgh missing then, for example? Is it among your three T's, technology, talent, and tolerance? What's the missing T?
Well, we've got technology in spades. The problem is we score lowly on tolerance. And, you know, I did an interview for the CBC tonight, and the African-American sound man who was over here told me he moved to Washington, D.C. because of the multicultural diversity, because it was the kind of place where he felt the energy of gay people, black people being quite successful, Hispanic people, new immigrants, musicians, government people. The same thing could be said of a place like even Boston today. Who would have guessed that Boston could be that way, or, you know, San Francisco or Austin? I think what happens in a place like Pittsburgh is those people don't feel like they fit in. It's a country club mentality, and then they move away and they find a place where they do fit in.
And the people who are there aren't the ones who are necessarily going to make the breakthroughs you're seeing. But you referred to this kind of diverse, I don't know, funky population making pots and pans and bicycles. But isn't this all really a wrapper around a desire to have high technology? Isn't that the ultimate seed pod you want to get a hold of here? The sort of programmers and geneticists and human genome mappers who are going to build new economies. Is all of this pyramid of cool just to entice that little group of the highly educated new frontier people in?
In the preface for this new book, I take that on and I say no. It's not the case. You certainly want high technology stuff, but the key is that creativity is in everything. Every product, you know, I talk about eyeglasses. My father made eyeglasses at a company called Victory Optical. He was a shop floor worker. They cost $8 or $9 or $10 to pay for the material and the labor. Today, people spend 10 times, 20 times, 50 times that for a pair of eyeglasses. They're buying the creative and aesthetic content. It's not just about high technology. My argument actually derives from my studies of Japanese manufacturing. The Japanese prospered because they tapped and harnessed the creative energy of their shop floor workers while we ignored it. Imagine if a city can tap and harness the creative energy of its people. That's what I'm saying. And all the people, the kid who wants to be a DJ, a hip-hop poet, a graffiti artist, we have to harness all of that creative energy.
Jack, Richard Florida says, let it flow. Harness all of it.
Well, yes, but Albany is making a bigger bet than that. They're actually saying, we do want those people, and here's how we're going to do it. They are creating the largest chip manufacturing facility in the United States, in Albany, with billions of private and state money. And the gamble is they're going to actually start a bit, you know, the high-tech people are going to have to come to them, and that this will help to revive what is a very moribund city.
So, David Dukovich, look at Albany. Put it on your list of top 40. They're going to put a huge semiconductor factory in there. How do you reckon its odds of that working out?
Well, with all due respect to Professor Florida, and I really enjoyed his book, and I learned so much. I tend to believe, coming from Forbes, of course, that it's the economy, stupid.
The semiconductor plant and the diversity will come.
Yeah, no, I think that that's true. I think that with a bettering economy, you'll have better nightlife, you'll have better culture. It lifts all boats. When you look at, the cities that have been traditionally or historically cool, you look at Seattle in the 90s, for example, with Kurt Cobain, the grunge culture. I mean, we have to keep in mind that there were a lot of economic things happening during the 90s in Seattle. We had a little thing called Microsoft.
Yeah, and in Austin, a little thing called Dell.
Exactly. So, although I think that those other initiatives that cities could take certainly wouldn't hurt, I definitely think that the foundation needs to come from a bettering economy. And Pittsburgh, in the two economic components that we look at, the job growth ranking and the cost of living single ranking,
yeah,
scores really poorly.
So the writer for the Capitalist Tool says he's still putting his money on capital. We have a lot of listeners who want to join this conversation. Kate's calling from Boston. Hi, Kate. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Great. Thanks.
Good. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to know that our city is on the top three of the list.
Hot times tonight in Boston, but we're not alone up there. There's a lot of cities that make the cool ranking on David Dukovich's list.
I'm very happy about that. I just wanted to call and say I think it's a very interesting conversation, and to throw in, I guess, the fact that I really think as someone who falls right into that age group category, I was very attracted to moving back to Boston, moving back to Massachusetts after college because of exactly the factors mentioned. I wanted to be in a place, for me, it was really important to be in a place that was socially progressive, and I guess you could describe that in all the areas of diversity that were mentioned. I really enjoy being in a city where, there's a little bit of everything, and I mean, I guess Massachusetts is really in the news these days with the SJC ruling, which is pretty amazing. And
this is to permit gay marriage.
Exactly, yeah.
Michigan, where the governor was talking a part about, Kate, they had 33,000 young adults who left the cities of Southeast Michigan in the last 2 years. But you're saying you found a magnet city, and you're going to. You want to be there.
And I just got married, too, so it's not even about being single. I mean, my husband and I really enjoy a place where we feel like when we have children, it's going to grow.
I learned this is not just about...
Kate, your line's breaking up, but thanks for your call there. Richard Florida.
I learned this is not just all about the economy, because I live in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
we would try to attract people to Carnegie Mellon, which is arguably one of the three or four greatest technology universities in the world.
Yeah.
We would offer them high pay. We would offer them extraordinarily significant postdoc positions, assistant professorships. And you know what they'd say? I'd rather stay making $18,000 at MIT. Why? Because I want to live in Boston. I'd rather stay at Berkeley making $16,500 without a tenure-track position.
Right.
Why? Because I want to live in the Bay Area.
So they want to be, well, they want to be, but making places that desirable is a tricky business, a tricky chemistry. We heard the governor of Michigan, Jennifer Granholm, earlier talking about how she's creating commissioners of cool, encouraging mayors across that state to try and do it. But can that work? We're joined now from Midland, Michigan, by Michael Lefebvre. He's director of fiscal policy for the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. It's a nonprofit research and educational institute headquartered there in Midland. Good evening and welcome, Michael Lefebvre.
Good evening and thank you.
It's great to have you. Michael, you have written, the headline is, Government Can't Do Cool, How Overregulation Kills Cool, Hip Cities. Well, you've got a governor who's banking on firing up some coolness there. Can government make this happen?
Well, I had a hard time finding anything with Governor Granholm's remarks that I could disagree with. She seemed to emphasize the private sector nature of things, the importance of inspiring entrepreneurs. All of that I agree with. What I would disagree with is exactly how she wants policymakers to empower the creative class. If that means a transfer of wealth, then no, government cannot do cool. In fact, government can't give anyone anything it doesn't first take from someone else. So if it creates coolness in one part of the city, it's going to have to destroy it elsewhere because you've left entrepreneurs and other people with less money to maximize their own self-interest.
What's the evidence you would cite for that view, Michael Lefebvre?
Consider the city of Detroit. For 40 years, they have chased entrepreneurs from the city with a tax rate that's seven times higher than any other city in the state of Michigan. Their regulations are onerous, and their schools are appalling as well. In fact, Governor Granholm and Mayor Kilpatrick effectively repudiated a $200 million gift that would have improved the city's education infrastructure. Nothing could send out a signal that Detroit was more cool.
This was a private gift, but the teachers union or something didn't want it to come in. Is that right?
That's precisely it, because it would have built charter schools instead of invested in traditional government schools. They did not. Governor Watt seems to want choice for entrepreneurs and other cool people.
She certainly says so.
Right, but when it comes down to allowing choice for, say, parents so their children can hopefully get a better education, it was quashed. And that sends a terrible signal, and just another one that Detroit has sent out over the years.
So here we see the idea of being cool and economic growth intersecting with politics, and you're saying if it means more government intervention, forget about it. Do you reject the idea of cool, of hip places as a matter of importance, or you say bring it on?
No, I think cool and hip places are wonderful and absolutely important. In fact, diversity, I have to agree with your other scholars, is probably one of the number one things people look at.
So how would you encourage that?
Across the board reforms. Detroit cannot make a renaissance comeback that they keep talking about with tax rates that are seven times higher than everybody else. Another thing about Detroit is the regulation. You know, Governor Granholm mentioned Motown and how we were famous for music at one time. Did you know that Berry Gordy could not have started his business in Detroit today because it was a home-based business, which are now illegal in the city?
Richard, Florida, does it take a libertarian streak to make cool happen, or does government have a role?
I have to agree with this, and I come from sort of the center-left of the political spectrum, but the libertarian folks have picked up on this message, and you know, they read Jane Jacobs, and what Jane said is you can't do this from the top down. It has to come from the bottom up. I mean, Jack was talking about that. It has to come from the bottom up. And the point is for government, in many cases, to simply get out of the way and empower this creativity. I think the idea of across-the-board reform is a good one. Now, the one thing I do want to say is you might think this is crazy, but I am very high on Detroit. If you think about Detroit in a new way and get away from this idea that downtown Detroit is going to be the center of the universe and just flip that metro over and say the new center of the Detroit economy is Ann Arbor with arguably the greatest research university in the world.
So we're talking greater Detroit here.
And you combine with the musical assets, and not just Motown, I mean from Madonna to Kid Rock to Eminem to Jack White and the White Stripes.
Michael Lefebvre, how about it? Have you got the next cool center of the universe in Detroit there?
You know what? The magic of Detroit is its potential. despite the fact that half the population has left, it left behind an exciting infrastructure with architecture that you're not going to find in many other cities.
So it could happen. It could happen. Michael Lefebvre, I know we have to let you go, but thank you very much for joining us tonight.
My pleasure.
Michael Lefebvre, Director of the Fiscal Policy Center for the Mackinac Center for Public Policy in Midland, Michigan. We're talking tonight about the Great American Cool Contest, cities and states striving to be hip to attract top young workers and economic growth. Does this all sound like PR and poppycock to you? Or like the underpinnings of 21st century dynamism? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the new cool imperative, about cities and states striving to be hip to attract top young workers and economic growth. Our guest tonight, Richard Florida, professor of regional economic development at Carnegie Mellon University and author of The Rise of the Creative Class and How It's Transforming Work, Leisure, Community, and Everyday Life. From New York, David Dukovich is with us. He's a staff writer for Forbes.com, author of the annual index of the 40 best American cities for singles. With me in the studio tonight, our own Jack Beatty. You can join the conversation as well. Are you the target young worker? Does it take cool to turn your head, or just a job? And which came first, Seattle cool or Bill Gates? Austin cool or Michael Dell? Is being cool really now a prerequisite for being economically vibrant? We're at 1-800-423-8255, and we have a mountain of cool callers on the line. Kevin's calling from Spokane, Washington. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air.
Yes, thanks.
Sure.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I just had a very interesting poignant experience. I was in a job interview here in Spokane, Washington.
Okay.
And we got into a conversation about why some of the firms have not done well in this city, and what is it about this city that has created that dynamic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I got in the car and started listening to your broadcast, and I think you hit it right on the head. We have got an extremely cool city here. It's got a vibrant downtown. It's got great architecture. It's got great city parks.
So what's the problem, Kevin?
I don't know. In addition to that, we've got, sports, WSU football, top 10 team.
So if you've got all that going on, why do you think you're having some misses out there?
It's a perception issue. It's a marketing issue.
Ah.
The people don't know about us, and the message isn't getting out.
Now that is a great word, and I'm glad you raised that. And Kevin, thanks for your call, and I hope everybody learns just how hip Spokane is. But Richard Florida, how about this marketing issue? How much of what you're talking about is marketing? Is this just about who can blow their hip horn the loudest?
I've been to Spokane, and we did a marvelous series of events and worked with local leadership, and I think, like Detroit, Spokane has a tremendous amount of assets, but two chefs can have the same ingredients and make quite a different meal. And the key to being an innovative and a creative place is to put those ingredients together in a productive way.
Decorous there, but what are you saying about Spokane?
I think that Spokane has a lot of potential. I think that the major issue in Spokane is that the university is not as strong as it should be, and that university is not connected to the local economy in the way Stanford is to the Palo Alto and Bay Area, in the way MIT is to the greater Boston, Cambridge area.
So they need to turn the Rubik's Cube a little bit there to get things integrated.
I want to go to this point about creative places and say that, your point about what came first.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about these great places, San Francisco, Seattle, and Austin, before Bill Gates ever showed up there, Seattle had a strong music scene. Remember, Paul Allen devotes his museum to the legacy of his idol, African-American Seattle musician Jimi Hendrix.
That's right.
Austin had Willie Nelson way before it had Michael Dell, and San Francisco had Moby, as silly as it sounds, Moby Grape, the Grateful Dead, the Jefferson Airplane before. What my work tries to say is that there are certain ecosystem characteristics about a place, an environment. If the environment can attract musicians and poets and artists and gays, those people need to be accepted and they need to mobilize resources to do their thing. That's the same thing that technology entrepreneurs need. Those places have an environment that empower people to use resources to do business things, where a Pittsburgh or a Detroit or even a Spokane probably has a slightly different, less innovative climate.
Let me ask you something then. Is it about relativity? Let's say every place in America became hip tomorrow. Then does everything go to the very hippest place? Does somebody have to lose in this cool contest?
The governor said this. It's the three T's: technology, talent, and tolerance. For every Pittsburgh and Cleveland, there's a Miami and New Orleans. What could be cooler than hanging around South Beach or being, in New Orleans having a giant party? But the point is, the relativity is you need to be a technology leader. You need to be creating and producing very highly educated, sophisticated, and entrepreneurial people and retaining them. And you need to be tolerant and open to foreign-born people, immigrants, African-Americans, gays.
So you're saying Miami and New Orleans may have the latter, but not necessarily enough of the former, the tech
and... No, New Orleans and Miami are about ranked where Pittsburgh and Cleveland are on my list because they're very open and tolerant and sexy and cool, but they don't have the economic base. So it's both. The relativity is that you need to do everything.
Imran's calling from Ashland, Massachusetts. Hi, Imran. You're on the air.
Hi. You know, I just want to say I work in the biotech industry in Cambridge.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the companies I worked for kind of exemplified the fast company, and I now work for a startup. And what I was going to say is that the one thing that I see in kind of my line of business that really kind of creates this engine of creation, at least in the biotech sector, is the critical number of universities in the area. And the other point I wanted to make was regarding the role of government. I think the two engines for technology creation that the federal government has sponsored has been NIH funding and the Bayh-Dole Act, which allowed the whole technology transfer industry to arise in universities, which then kind of fosters, you know, VC investment.
Right. So there's a kind of a very important government underpinning in your mind.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that the one thing I wanted to ask your guests is that when you look at those industries that mature, do you see coolness go away? And I look at, you know, biotech in Cambridge, where you get a lot of cool people coming to work.
Yeah.
And in fact, attracting large pharmaceutical companies to set up shop in Cambridge. And New Jersey, which is actually dying to kind of keep people there, at least in the pharmaceutical industry. And I don't think New Jersey's ever really struck anybody as being a particularly cool place to live.
We got it, Imran. Thanks for your call. David Dukovich, first to you. It seems like every other burg in the country wants to be the next biotech center. Does that show up on your top cities for singles count? If you've got you know, some loose jeans running around, does that make it a sexy city?
We never get that specific in looking at, you know, specific industries, things like this. The two economic components that we focus on exclusively is how many jobs will that metro area gain percentually over the next 5 years. And then we've got this cost ranking, which, again, is narrowly focused on the things that single people would spend money on. Again, you know, the cost of a medium-sized Pizza Hut pizza, the cost of a six-pack of Heineken. But
so you don't care if they work at a biotech lab or not?
Well, we do, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we do incorporate Richard's coolness index into the ranking.
Mm-hmm.
So and that does, of course, take into account, you know, technology and the so-called creative class. But no, nothing that sort of we don't look at anything as defined.
Not
as
that specifically.
Biotech.
And Richard Florida, how about these two points? First of all, the kind of NIH funding and the fundamental scientific research plank. How important is that? And secondly, to Imran's question about maturing industries, once you get this thing fired up and biotech, you know, adventurous labs turn into pharmaceutical factories, does coolness go away? Do you have to start over again?
Well, it's critical. I wrote two books on that question, a book in 1990 and a book in the mid-1990s with a group of people at Harvard on how important federal funding for science and technology are to our economy, which scares me to death.
Why?
It's the two great underpinnings of America's greatness: funding for science, technology, and open disclosure of research, and I would say even more important, openness to foreign immigrants, are the two things that our government and our current administration are curtailing and cutting back on. It's actually, and the studies are out, showing that scientists are no longer applying for visas to come to the United States, but going to the UK and Canada. So that scares me because we're losing a historic advantage.
Well, we know there's still a lot coming, but maybe not in the same abundance that they was to. But what about this issue of maturing industries?
Well, the other point about biotech, and we'll get to maturing industries, is we know that there's, according to research done by a fabulous guy, Joe Courtwright in Portland, Oregon, about six cities that are going to make it in the biotech war.
Mm-hmm.
Boston, the Washington-Baltimore area, Seattle, San Francisco, and a couple of others. All of those cities score very well on the three T's. They're technology centers with great universities, they're talent meccas and magnets, and they're very tolerant, open places. Why? Because biotech is the quintessential people-driven industry. That's where the talented people have complete choice to be wherever they want to be. Mm-hmm. They want to go to a great, exciting technology place. I don't know about whether if a place matures, it has to lose it. I mean, clearly Boston didn't lose it, while Pittsburgh and Cleveland and Detroit lost it. Clearly New York City has always been a mecca for exciting things. But I think I think people have said this before. When a place gets too controlled by an elite, whether it's a political elite or a corporate elite that wants to squelch down and harm that entrepreneurial impulse and say, we're to bet the farm on General Motors, Fords, and Chrysler, that's when this thing starts to stop. That's so when it starts to slow down.
Right.
To harness that more broad entrepreneurial energy.
So keep mixing it up. Keep it feisty. We like that. Dave's calling from Toronto, Canada. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi, Anton. A call from the home of Jane Jacobs, by the way.
The home of Jane Jacobs. All right, yes.
One of the things I wanted to comment on, like I work for a company right now. We're stretched all over the world. We do a lot of IT infrastructure kind of projects.
Yeah. Are you cool, Dave?
I think Toronto is a very cool city.
Okay.
And the thing is, we have a hard time now. We do a lot of work right now in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's a nice city, and they have a lot of things, but
It's held up as quite a you know, lovely up-and-coming city of the South.
But, you know, the thing about it, like a lot of our European people, for instance, they don't like living there. And a lot of our younger people don't like moving down there. They'll do the job, then they'll come back to wherever they are from.
Why? What's your assessment?
Well, this is what they're telling me. They don't like to think, you know, that whole the tolerance thing is one of the big things they're not very comfortable with down there. And they don't like their very preachy attitude about a lot of aspects, whereas you know, even though their tax rates are lower than us in Toronto, and then for a lot of young couples, what they don't like is the educational system.
So the educational system and the tolerance factor puts its nose up here again. David, thanks for your call. Richard, Florida, talk about Charlotte for a minute, and more broadly about tolerance. I suppose it's easy to imagine or wish that one lives in a tolerant city and not be quite tolerant enough to make your cool list.
Well, I know both cities well. First of all, I think Toronto is the city to which every North American city has to aspire. They are now more than 50% foreign-born. They allow gay people to marry. They support arts and culture. They're growing like gangbusters while we're in a recession. They have a word that I'd like your listeners to take into account.
Mm-hmm.
They don't call themselves a melting pot. They call themselves a mosaic. And if there's one word that describes my theory, this notion of a mosaic, whether you're gay or straight, Latino, black, white, young or old, rich or poor, working class or creative class, you all fit into the whole and make the mosaic.
And be glad for that.
We've done a big project in Charlotte. The problem in Charlotte is exactly what your caller said. There is a legacy of religious social conservatism, which is fine for the people who buy into that, but which infuses the culture. And to a person, the people we interviewed and talked to and the leadership of Charlotte was very concerned about this because they felt it was not enabling them to attract and retain the kind. It's the same thing in Cincinnati where now, by the way, and it's the thing I'm most proud of, Procter & Gamble is committing itself to repeal Article 12, which discriminates against gays. So what we're seeing is this tolerance piece being open to different kinds of people because our people are so different in this mosaic economy, that society we live in.
And yet that
really
religious
critical piece
is so deeply ingrained in many cultures. I want to get one more call here. Dina's calling from Boston. Hi, Dina. You're on the air. Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I'm representing a group of young people who are going back to Detroit.
Hey, and in your case, from?
I grew up in suburban Detroit, and I've been in Boston now for about 6 years, and I'm married, I'm a young professional, I'm trying to get more of a stability thing going in my life, and Boston just isn't cutting it for me, so I think...
Because? Why?
I can't afford it here anymore.
It's just too expensive.
It's way too expensive, and it's been very cool. I've had a great time, but my time's run out, and I have other priorities, so I've got to go back.
And Detroit's looking good to you because it's more affordable and cool enough?
Yeah, but that's about the only reason, and not cool enough at all, actually. My family's there, and it's affordable, but that's about it. I'm going to miss Boston, but I don't have a choice.
Dina, we'll miss you too, but keep listening, and good luck in Detroit. Richard, Florida, very quickly, our time is running down, but how about this? A victim of success here? Too cool, too expensive?
Well, first, Dina, we have a big event coming up in Detroit in March, and please come and bring your friends. And second, I think this housing affordability issue, as so many of these young creatives pack themselves into San Francisco, D.C., Boston, Minneapolis and Chicago, is going to be the thing that breaks the camel's back. What we're seeing is that people can no longer afford to live in these cities. The only way to undo that is for Pittsburgh and Cleveland and Detroit to really come up to belly up to the bar and offer them something.
Sounds like
that's
a big,
why what Granholm is offering is so important.
Sounds like a very big opportunity. Jack Beattie, there's a mosaic for you tonight. Make it yeasty, make it feisty, make it democratic, make it tolerant. Doesn't sound like a bad century to me.
No, make it cheap, too, for young people.
Hey, let's go.
Yeah, I mean, there's that paradox of prosperity. You know, they just, you max out. The city gets to be so expensive that people can't stay there. And then another cycle has to start. And you know what I say? Bring on Worcester.
Bring on Worcester. Bring on Milwaukee. Bring on Detroit. Bring on the country. Bring on the world. Richard Florida, it's great talking to you. If this is what it's going to, if this is the new economic imperative, it doesn't sound too bad. And thanks for exploring it for us.
Hey, thank you, guys. What Jane Jacobs said, when the city gets boring, even the rich people leave.
Off they go. Hear the carriages clattering now. David Dukovich, thanks so much for your list each year and for your observations tonight.
Thanks. Good evening.
It's great to have you. Well, Jack Beatty, here we are. Cool? Cool enough? Are you feeling cool tonight, Jack? Does it feel like prosperity lies in hipness now?
If it does, I'm sunk.
I don't know. You may be there. Listeners, thanks for being with us. You can listen to this show and other On Point shows at onpointradio.org. Click on Archives. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.